Welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features. Today I have a woman who's got a unique name I've never heard before. Her film is Praying Mantis. Jolita Drake?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, I got it right. I got one
good
right.
Job.
Win
yeah.
for me. Welcome. Now, I think you advertised this as a no-budget short, if I remember correctly.
Yes, no budget. And not only no budget, it is my first film ever. It's the first thing I've ever written as well as directed. And all of the budget came out of my own pocket. Maybe like $200 or $300 spent to make the whole thing happen. It was created as part of a class for my film program at UH Manoa. All of the equipment we used was borrowed from the school's library. It was a total passion project. Just everyone volunteered to make it happen. And I couldn't have been luckier with the team that I got.
Well, you're hoping a ton of questions. Okay.
Okay.
I'll start at the beginning.
Where did
the writing process come from? Where did the idea come from?
Yeah. So actually it kind of like struck me in the middle of the night. I was actually really interested in originally writing something that kind of was a play on The Metamorphosis by Franz Kafka. I had this really big idea about like, you know, kind of using that story to talk about like chronic illness and disability in today's society. And I also got really hyper fixated on the idea of having bug prosthetics. And obviously, as we've said, it's a no budget film. So all of the things I was looking up for, like in terms of whether or not I could pull off a realistic bug prosthetic situation, was way too expensive because I am a broke college student. So that kind of got me down a different train of looking up just like bug costumes in general, like cheaper ones. And I came across a praying mantis costume. And a little known fact about me is that when I was a kid, my first pets were praying mantids. We couldn't have cats or dogs or any of the traditional pets in my apartment. So my dad and I would raise praying mantis. Like praying mantids, and we would like hand catch them food to eat and all of this stuff. So they were kind of a big hyper fixation of mine when I was a kid. And you know, as time has gone on, praying mantids have become like kind of like a unsung feminist iconic hero, just because they have such powerful females. I don't know. I thought that, you know, the idea of taking a story about a girl who's obsessed with praying mantids, it's a little bit of a personal story, and kind of like seeing where her story goes, from there after, you know, finding love or what she thinks is love. That's kind of how that story came to light. But yeah.
Okay. You said you borrowed all the equipment from the library. Now, is that normal?
Yes.
Are you a film student?
Just I am a film student.
So
yes.
Don't you have a film department to borrow equipment from?
Yes. Well, we did borrow it from the film department, but the library also has equipment. But you are right. This time we borrowed it from the film department as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, where did you find the costume? So, you said you bought a praying mantis costume.
Yes.
So, obviously, that's for the lead.
Yes. So, I bought the praying mantis costume for my lead. My joint costume was made by a friend of mine, a dear friend of mine, for Andy's character. All of the rest of the costumes for the party were like sourced by the actor themselves. They came in whatever costumes they wanted to. We just made sure there was no copyrighted material or anything, just in case. And then the shirt that she wears, I don't know if it's like super noticeable in the film on first watch, but it's a little Easter egg for me. The shirt says, "This is my human costume. I'm really a praying mantis."
Yes, it is noticeable.
Okay.
On the bed
I
you're talking about, right?
yeah, that one was actually just a funny find I found online. I was like, "This is hilarious, and I want this in my show or in my film." Other than that, the costumes were sourced by the actors themselves. So, yeah.
You said to spend $300. I'm not asking where you spent your money. It's more of a question. You spent
Yeah.
some money on the costume,
Yeah.
and I guess the rest of the money's on food. That's just my guess.
Well, some of the money was on certain praying mantis decorations.
I
There
will get
was
there
one.
later, but that's fine. Go ahead.
Yeah, the cardboard one that fell with the head, when the head fell off,
Yes.
that one is actually my childhood decoration. I've had that since I was a child. But the other like little metal ones and her little stuffed mantis, those were all purchased for this film. We did buy a bunch of food for the cast and crew. But there was also buying the cross necklace. There was also
Oh, okay, because
buying.
she definitely see that in the party scene.
Yeah. So there we bought quite a bit of little like things here and there. Buying the fake, well, I guess this is kind of a spoiler, but buying some of the special effects things that we used was yeah, that was part of the budget. So yeah.
Yeah, I want to go back. I'm trying to figure out where I was. Okay, we're at the party sequence. You've framed it. So how did you, being a first-time director, framed what you wanted to do? Obviously, we come in, you show me a bunch of people, then you get to your main two. So I mean, you're setting a scene. I understand that, but did you do that in your head, or did you practice a couple times? Like, how did that work for you?
So I was really lucky to be working in tandem with my like cinematographer Lauren Peeler, and she had a lot of really brilliant ideas of how to frame like the sort of more scenic movie like party scene bits. I had a very clear vision of what I wanted when it was focused in on the two main characters.
Yes, I could see that.
And I took a lot of inspiration from Edgar Wright's editing style with the body going across the camera and the smoke transition and things like that. I wanted it to kind of show like time is passing and she is remaining kind of like awkwardly in the corner by herself. And that was kind of the vision for that. But yeah, I did have a plan for it. And I think we were able to pull it off pretty well, considering it being our first time doing it. But yeah.
Okay, so you didn't enjoy the party scene shooting it, then you relied on your cinematographer.
Yeah.
I'm gonna finish. Sorry, I have a longer question. So when we get to the root scene when it's just her by herself,
Yeah.
you're much happier, I think.
Yeah. The party scene, we definitely collaborated on like getting the
Okay.
shots of everything. It was definitely like an idea that was given to me by Lauren, and then we explored it together. And when we got locked in on Francis in like sitting alone. It was definitely a process, like, to get those shots lined up the way that we wanted to. It took a few tries, but we were eventually able to do it. And I'm pretty happy with the result, for all of it, including the party scene.
Okay, let's go back. How long did it take you to shoot the film, and how long did it take you to shoot each scene?
Honestly, it didn't take very long to shoot the film. We did it over 2 days. The first day was a bit of a long one, but we did have a really long break in between shots. We started filming with the bedroom scene with Frances by
Oh.
herself. Yeah. So we shot from about 10 a.m. All the way down to like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and then we had like a long 4 hour break, and we came back and shot the party scene, the first party scene, like at as soon as the sun started going down. Then we went all the way through to the bedroom scene with Francis and Andy, and then the next day we shot the rest of the film, pretty much in order. And the second day of shooting was only about 5 hours. But the first day, I mean, it was a long day because we had a long break in the middle. sorry, excuse me, I'm getting over COVID.
No, all good, all good.
It only took two days, and we were able to get through it relatively quickly. I was very lucky. My actors are incredible, and they made the process so smooth and easy. Like we usually, if we had to do another take of something, it was because we had a couple animals in the house. So we'd have a dog bark or something. Like, it was never my actors that we needed to restart for. So we were really lucky in that way.
Yes, you did mention smoke effects, is where I got confused. What Edgar Wright
Yes.
movie were you specifically after?
Okay, the smoke effects were not inspired by Edgar Wright. The body crossing over the
Oh, I
camera.
apologize then. I misunderstood.
Yeah, no, you're totally fine. The smoke effects were actually a very last minute decision. I was a chronic vapor at the time, and I thought I could use that. So it was a little bit of a silly addition to the story. Yeah, the Edgar Wright movie that I was specifically like thinking of was Scott Pilgrim versus the World. That's one of my all-time favorite movies. And there, is a party scene where Scott is approaching Ramona, and there are people walking in front of the camera, and it slowly zooms in on Ramona, and that was kind of like what inspired that.
Okay. And so the house all shot in one house or using two houses?
Yes, it was all shot in one house. The same bedroom for both bedroom scenes. We did have to rearrange the furniture and change all of the wall dressings and stuff. But all of it was shot in one house. My dear friend Shannon's house, who was also a great help on set. It's a beautiful location up a mountain here in Hawaii. It was just kind of the perfect setting, I think, for this story to take place.
Who does the voice of the phone call?
My dear friend Kyla Blaise. She's a lovely theater actress here. She's huge in the community theater here. She was my lovely ex-girlfriend. I know it was definitely Like, we had to figure out how to get the voice recording. We just had her send audio notes to my phone. And then when we found one that we liked, we had Olivia, who played Frances, like just pressed play on the audio recording on the phone so that it sounded like a voice note that was being sent
Fair
to her.
enough.
Yeah. So yeah, that was really cool. And it was really nice to work with my friends on this project.
Lots of sound effects. Lots.
Yeah.
So when did you do
Yes.
those? On set, or did you add them in after?
After. We added them in after, but some of them were done on set. My audio artist, AJ, and also Jace, my Andy, as well as Shannon, the friend who was hosting the location, they all got together and did a little bit of Foley work while we were dressing Olivia for the final scene. And they ended up coming up with a lot of really creative sounds that we ended up using, especially to like towards the end with all the kerfuffle. The oh my gosh, I'm losing track of what the instrument is, but the music at the end of the film is all done our live or not live, but we recorded it on set. The kalimba music is completely original music. It was just improvised by one of our actors. So yeah.
So I do have one last question.
Yeah.
What happened to the costume at the end of the film? The shooting is over. I want to
Yeah.
know what happened to that costume.
I still have it. I still have it. It is fully, it's altered forever. It's definitely going to be. I really want to keep it. I'm a very sentimental person, and I'm a bit of a collector myself, and I just really want to hold on to it.
So if I come to your house in, let's say, 10 years, I'll find it on the wall. Like
Yeah,
framed,
maybe. Yeah.
I'm thinking it might be framed on the wall. Like I definitely see that coming.
That would be really cool.
I presume your film is only available on the film festival circuit right now.
Yes, so I did submit it to about seven different film festivals. I'm really, crossing my fingers, hoping that it gets accepted by something. So unfortunately, it's not like widely available to watch right at the moment.
Where will it end up?
I have submitted it to, ooh, let me pull up the list. Let me see. Okay, I've submitted it to Hawaii International Film Festival, South Pacific Film Festival, Brooklyn Horror Film Festival, Halloween Horror Festival, Chicago Horror Film Festival, Horror Genre Lab, presented by, I don't know what that says, and Pacific Coast International Short Film Festival. I have the highest hopes for Hawaii International Film Festival as well as South Pacific. They're the ones who reached out to me to get in contact with you. And yeah, I'm just really hopeful that it gets out there, and if all goes well, hopefully I'll be able to publicly release it soon as well.
Okay, I have three quick questions for you before you
Yeah.
go. You can't prepare. I hope you listen to an interview because you know what's coming
Okay.
next. If you didn't, that's your problem. Your
I
favorite
did.
film?
My favorite film, Princess Mononoke.
Number two. See,
Absolutely.
this is the second question you can't prepare for.
Okay.
One actor you will work with in the future?
Oh, one actor I really want to work with in the future, Mads Mikkelsen.
Oh, good choice. I
I
will give you a
really want.
full credit on that choice.
Yes, I really
Since
want to.
you're a young filmmaker, one film you should have seen by now, and you just haven't quite got to it.
Oh, The Matrix.
Oh my God.
I
Wow.
know. I know.
Well,
I'm a terrible film major. But yeah.
I don't know if you have a website or anything people can see other work you've done, or maybe in the future. If you do,
Yes,
that's a good time to tell people.
I don't know what it's called. I don't know. I made a website a while back, and I haven't been using it. So
So, no website people, just listen to the interview. Look
yeah.
for the Praying Mantis film in about 6 months somewhere. How about that? Does that
Okay.
help you out?
Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
Perfect.
Thank you for your time and have a great day.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a good one.
So, when you're making a movie and you're getting
Mm-hmm.
everything together, how long does this take you?
In the past, I have gone from shooting a film, shooting it, taking a week or so off just to rest, and then starting the editing process, and I've gotten to a fully, like a first draft, like of the entire movie in 3 months. That's with that's with the dialogue all in place, the music kind of roughly in place, that kind of thing. That was under a lot of self-imposed pressure, and that was kind of crazy. But it was, I didn't get sick or have any kind of a nervous breakdown. This movie took a lot longer. Without a Name we shot it in October of 2022, and we did a screening of it in the f we did the first screen the cast and crew screening in the fall of 2023, so a year later. But it was very rough. I mean, there was, not everything was temporary. Sound effects were temporary. There was no color correction, that kind of thing. But to get everything to the point where it felt finished, that took probably another 9 months.
Wow.
And
So it's almost 2 years.
and I put the final stamp on it, like this is done, in March.
Wow.
So it took to about 2.5 years. Part of that was, honestly, was it the amount of time it took to bring everything to Larry, because I was, as I told you, I was meeting with him about once a week, and I was really happy to have his input, and I trusted his instincts and all of that. But at the same time, that took it took at least a day out of my week, my work week, just to go to the meeting and have everything set up, and we usually had dinner together or something like that, So that slowed me down a little bit. But again, I mean, that's like having a Svengali looking over your shoulder or Yoda, giving you this sage advice all the way through. So I was very happy about that. Happy to have that, but I wish it hadn't taken so long, to be honest.
So let's go back to the film. What hotel were you using, or what inn? I think it's more of an inn than a hotel.
Oh, that was called the Bonnie Bell. The Bonnie Bell Motel in Keewaskum, Wisconsin. And they were really cool. They gave us a very good rate. They let us shoot in the motel room. They let us shoot in the office, the motel office,
Hold
and
on,
they
is
let
that the
us.
sheriff's office too then?
No, that was a real sheriff office actually. I think that was also Keewaskum, or maybe it was West Bend. But again, this is all arranged by Eric Lukert. He just knew everybody, But yeah, they were letting us shoot in the actual sheriff's station. So those are real guns that you see in the background and real equipment.
Okay.
I and the thing was, they were there while we were shooting. We were being very quiet. I was so afraid that they were going to walk out and see that we had a bottle of whiskey sitting on the desk in front of the sheriff during the whole scene. Because it doesn't reflect well, but I mean, this is an imaginary place, and this is obviously a very corrupt sheriff, so hopefully, no, we weren't trying to make any kind of a statement on law enforcement. in general.
Okay.
But
You have a shot of a house. Like it's basically the cult house. I guess I could say that's the best. And it looks like a house, but the inside doesn't look like a house. So it's got to be two different shots.
yeah, we had to about halfway through shooting, we had a falling out with a couple of the employees of the movie. These were people who were not, they only worked on the movie a couple of days, and I didn't know them. I mean, I dealt with them, that kind of thing, but it was, I didn't know them. Anyway, they got it in their heads that we were making a very immoral film. And I'm not going to speak to
Okay.
why they thought that. But so they wanted to cause trouble. So they, first of all, they quit the film. And then they called the police on us. And the call to the police led to a call to the owner of the place where we had been staying and where we had been shooting. And so they contacted Eric, our producer. Well, first of all, nothing happened with the police. There was nothing wrong. Everything was on the level, everything, all safety protocols, COVID, we were being very careful about that. So we weren't in trouble for anything. But at the same time, the owner of the venue where we were shooting and living, got spooked and contacted Eric and said, hey, we can't have the movie there. So we had to move. So Eric and Hayato found us new places to stay, and Eric found us new places to shoot. So that's why the inside doesn't always match the outside of the. But I was trying to lean into it and just say, you know what, this is a weird world, and the architecture doesn't match up the, and that's low budget. But that's also the kind of, that's also the kind of surreal world that these characters were inhabiting. So
Do
I'm
the
hoping it
numbers
all,
mean anything of the children?
the numbers, only in one case. I wanted to give the one character the name 10.
Yes, that's one of the main ones.
Yeah, because the girl said, I think he's a 10, because she had
Yes,
a
she
crush on
does.
him. So that was where his number came from. But for the rest of them, we were just trying to make it as random as possible.
Okay, so there's no, okay,
I
I was
think
looking for some.
one of the girls, her name was QT, and that was not a statement on, that was in the script. It was not a statement on the actress herself. We weren't trying to say she was a cutie. I thought all the kids were very nice looking, but that was not, again, we weren't trying to get into anything like that. We
So,
just, we, because we didn't want there to be a hidden meaning. We had enough hidden meanings. We didn't want the names to be to be hidden meanings.
how old is the car your main character is driving? It has a CD player in it.
It's that car actually belongs to our cinematographer. That is Griffith Mahaffey, and he drove it up from Louisiana to work with us. He lives near Baton Rouge, and he loves that vehicle. He takes very good care of it. It does not have a CD player. A cassette player. That shot is actually a piece of stock footage.
Okay.
But I hope that doesn't spoil the movie for people.
No, it's just way of going into it. You know what I'm like.
Yeah.
You have
Yeah,
old
yeah.
shots, brownish color. I presume
Yeah.
you just color corrected those.
Yeah. Yeah. It was sad too, actually, because that the pastor's wearing this beautiful blue robe. I mean, it's just I thought those I thought the footage was gorgeous, and I was so sad that we couldn't use it, but I just said, I need a way to differentiate the past from the present. I didn't want to confuse the audience. Like, is this happening now? Who are these people? Because everybody in that scene, all the extras and everything, they don't appear anywhere else in the movie.
No, I do not.
Yeah.
I can back you up on that one. Oh, what are the jars by the window?
You mean what's in them or what are they
What
made
is
of?
in them?
I don't want to reveal that
Okay,
because
so
I
it
don't
is what
want
I
to
think it is
spoil.
in the movie.
Yeah, I don't want to
Okay.
spoil that, but
That's fine. Okay. So I just wanted to know more the substance of the creation, not
yes.
what it is supposed to be the film. What did you make them with? Or you don't want to
Oh,
tell me that
these.
either. That's what
No,
I'm
no.
looking
These.
for.
Those were. Procured by Eric and Kim Witte. I think she had a hand in it, and Aaron also. They bought the jars.
Stuff them.
Stuffed them. And actually, there are some jars in another room. Those were filled by Kim Witte. She filled them with all kinds of creepy, objects and put liquid in some of them. I mean, it was, I kind of wish, it's one of those things as a filmmaker, you say, God, I wish we could spend more time on this because these things are gorgeous. And so I'm hoping that people will, if they get a chance to see the movie, they'll want to go back and take another look at some of those scenes because the work these people did, I was very delighted with.
How much research on cults did you do?
I'm not an expert by any means. I've certainly followed, like seen documentaries and heard reports about the antics of, for example, Scientology. Scientology has a huge presence in Los Angeles. I don't know if people know that they own a bunch of buildings in Hollywood, and I don't know if they still do, but they hire a lot of actors. They used to, because they made a lot of films for their programs, and they would pay union rates. I mean, actors I know who've been in their things have said, "Yeah, it was great. I was paid very well." That kind of thing. So they're not, doing bad things to people as far as at least publicly facing, but the tactics that they use, if you're walking down Hollywood Boulevard, for example, usually outside of one of the Scientologists' gorgeous antique buildings in right in the middle of Hollywood, a very well-dressed person will walk up to you and they will say something like, "Would you like to take a personality test?" They're very well groomed and that kind of thing. And you go in to this nicely appointed welcome center, and you get to take a fun personality test that, tries to get you to think about your own habits and that kind of thing. My understanding is that a personality test, that's one of the ways that some cults get people to go deeper. They started off as kind of a, get to know yourself kind of thing. I'm not saying that necessarily that's what Scientology does, or that directly leads to membership in Scientology, but that is a technique that I understand some cults use to attract new members. And of course, they try to separate anyone who's trying to get kids alienated and isolated. It immediately it's like, oh, do you hate your parents? Oh, do you hate you know, do you hate, you know, they, in other words, they want to get on your side and have the kids confide in your, get the kids to confide in them so that they can take them down kind of a darker path. It's pretty scary stuff. And then, of course, you probably have heard that serial killers often start off by experimenting on animals, cruelty to animals. And so that was a little, you know, that aspect of the story was a little we're a little nervous to go into that, but it is based on, you know, what's really part of that world. So nothing happened to the cat.
Well, I didn't
Nothing
think
happened to
anything
either
happened to
cat,
the
yeah.
cat. Okay.
Yes.
I could ask about the cat here, but I'm gonna let that go. Your favorite film of last year?
Last year. Oh God. You know, I don't know if it was last year. I really like Top Gun Maverick.
That
Was that the
was
year before?
2 years
Yeah.
ago, but that's fine. I'll take it. Favorite snack?
Oh God. I love dried fruit. It's very
Wow,
dangerous.
I
Yeah,
agree.
it's very dangerous because you eat too much of it and things happen. But that's
Quickly.
it. Yeah, but it tastes like candy. I mean,
It does. One actor you see all their films.
I'm sorry. Could what? Which
One
actor?
actor, whatever
Oh.
actor you want to say, you watch all their films.
Oh God, I would have to say, sorry about this long pause. Well, there are a couple of actors that I work with, and I will see in
That
anything
will
they are.
count.
No,
That counts.
that'll. Well, there's he's not in Without a Name, but there's an actor. If your listeners get a chance to find him, because he works all the time. His name is Tom Shanley. And he's been in four of my films. And he's got a small part in my new one, The Maginot Line. He was in She's Out of His Mind. That's one of my films. He's in a movie, a short film I made called Snacking, which is a comedy about film festivals. And Tom is brilliant. Tom, in 1983, Tom was one of the regular cast of a show called The Yellow Rose, which was a spin-off of Dallas.
Oh, that's why I
And
didn't see it. There you go. Yeah,
yeah.
I was really young for that one.
Okay. Well, Tom was in he was on the ca in the cast of that. Apparently, I think he said he got to kiss Heather Locklear. So that's nice. That was part of his role. But Tom was in a movie very recently called I'm so sorry.
All
It'll
good.
come to me. He starred in a movie called Get the Gringo with Mel Gibson.
I've seen that.
He usually plays a bad guy. He played a very scary drug dealer in Dexter, you know, the original. I think it was in the first season of the original
Then I've seen
Dexter.
him. I definitely have seen him.
Yeah, he looks like Rutger Hauer, if you
Okay.
know Rutger Hauer.
Of course I do. I've seen Blade Runner.
Okay, so yes, Tears in the Rain. Yeah, of course. That Tom has, and he has the same commanding presence. I mean, he's just, and the funny thing is that he's always getting cast as villains or as henchmen, but Tom is one of the funniest actors you've ever seen. And he does an episode of a show that I did with my brother called Free Advice. And free advice, if you go to freeadviceseries.com, you can see all our episodes for free. And Tom's episode is called The Four Locos. And he's a brilliant actor. And I hope to work with him again. I hope he keeps saying yes whenever I call him. I've had him dress up like a like an I put a I stuck him in an elf costume. He played an elf in my film Santa's Letters. In my film She's Out of His Mind, I had him in a duck costume. And at one point he said to me, Emmett, he said, "I wouldn't dress up like this for anybody but you, kid."
There
Which
you
made
go.
Me feel very good.
Okay, well, but thank you for your, oh, go ahead.
Just last thing. But on the other hand, I saw Tom on stage in the Los Angeles Shakespeare Festival a couple of years ago doing the scene of Mark Antony in, is it Richard the Third? Yeah, anyway, he did the scene of I Came Here to Bury Caesar, Not to Praise Him. Just my head exploded. I mean, it was such a phenomenal piece of acting. And anyway, that I mean, and that's his training. You know, he's but he can do almost anything, as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, yes, you were ending the show, and I respect that.
Okay, have a great night. Goodbye.
Thank you.